The air in the lobby of Miller & Associates smelled like industrial-grade lemon wax and the expensive, suffocating musk of Greg's cologne. It was 10:14 a.m. I know the exact minute, because the digital clock on my monitor flickered as I watched the man in the charcoal suit walk through the revolving glass doors. He didn't look like a courier. He looked like an executioner in a high taper fade. He didn't ask for a signature or a floor number. He just held a thick manila envelope against the glass partition, his eyes locking onto mine with a look that felt like a cold sweat. He asked if Greg was in. I told him Greg was in a strategy meeting, and that's when the man smiled, a slow, jagged expression that made the hair on my arm stand up. He didn't wait. He didn't follow protocol. He just dropped the envelope on the marble counter with a sound that felt as heavy as a body hitting the floor. "Tell him his wife says the house is already being rekeyed," the man said, turning on his heel before I could even process the words printed in bold serif type across the top. "Petition for dissolution of marriage." I should have hidden it. I should have shoved it under the stack of redirected mail or tucked it into the drawer where I keep the spare staples and my own quiet failures. But I didn't. I sat there, paralyzed, staring at the blue-backed paper while the office hummed with the sound of high-stakes litigation and the distant rhythmic clicking of heels on hardwood. Greg came out 3 minutes later. He was laughing. That deep, performative Barrett roll laugh he uses when he's just closed a deal or belittled an associate. He was flanked by the senior partners, a phalanx of ego and starch. He saw the envelope. He saw the way I was looking at it. My hands hovering over the keyboard like I was trying to ward off a ghost. The silence that followed was visceral. It wasn't just quiet. It was a vacuum. The laughter died in his throat, replaced by a wet, clicking sound as he swallowed. He didn't pick it up at first. He just leaned over the desk, his face inches from mine, and I could smell the three espressos and the sheer, unadulterated panic radiating off his skin. "What is this, Elena?" he whispered. But the whisper was sharp, a serrated edge cutting through the professional veneer of the lobby. I couldn't speak. My secret flaw has always been my inability to lie when the stakes are high. My face becomes a roadmap of the truth. I looked at the partners, then back at him, and the way he snatched that envelope was so violent that the corner of the paper sliced into my thumb. A small, bright bead of blood bloomed on the white laminate. He didn't apologize. He didn't even notice. He ripped it open right there, in the theater of the lobby, under the recessed lighting that made every word on those pages look like a confession. I saw the word adultery in the third paragraph. It was underlined in red pen, a frantic, jagged stroke that screamed of a woman who had spent the last 6 months counting receipts and tracking GPS pings. The office stopped moving. Sarah from accounting stood by the elevator, her finger frozen on the button, her eyes wide and hungry for the wreckage. Greg's face went from a pale, pasty white to a deep, bruised purple. He looked at me, not with embarrassment, but with a focused, toxic rage. He needed a villain. He needed a reason why this was happening here, in front of the people who signed his checks, instead of in the sterile privacy of a lawyer's office. He turned to the senior partners, his voice suddenly loud, booming, a frantic redirection. "I told her not to let personal couriers through," he barked, pointing a shaking finger at me. "I told Elena specifically that I was expecting a sensitive delivery, and it was to be handled with discretion. Why did you let him stand here? Why did you let him make a scene?" The lie was so seamless it made my head spin. I hadn't been told anything. I was the one who had spent the last year covering for him, taking calls from clients who sounded suspiciously like women in Midtown bars, forwarding his calls to a dead-end extension when his wife called the front desk crying. I was his shield, and now he was turning that shield into a weapon. The partners looked at me, their expressions hardening into that specific brand of corporate disappointment that precedes a termination. They didn't see a man being served for his own infidelities. They saw a receptionist who had failed to maintain the sanctity of the firm's image. The heat in my face was unbearable. I could feel the blood from my thumb smudging the E key on my keyboard. Greg was pacing now, the divorce papers crumpled in his fist like a spent cigarette. He was talking about security breaches, about the incompetence of the front desk, about how a man's private life shouldn't be subjected to the theatrical whims of a disgruntled employee. He was painting me as the conspirator. He was implying that I had tipped his wife off, that I had coordinated the timing of the delivery to coincide with the end of the partner's meeting. It was brilliant. In a sick, twisted way, by blaming me, he shifted the narrative from Greg is a cheater to Elena is a liability. I looked at the partners, my mouth opening to defend myself. But the words felt like lead. If I spoke, if I told them about the late night working sessions he had with the interns, if I mentioned the bottles of wine I'd seen him hide in his desk, I would be the bitter woman at the desk. I was trapped in the gravity of his meltdown. I watched him walk toward his office, his back stiff, still clutching those papers. And I realized that the point of no return wasn't when the papers were delivered. It was the moment I chose to be a witness instead of an actor. The office returned to a muffled version of its usual self, but the air was different. It was heavy with the scent of a dying career. Sarah from accounting finally got on the elevator, but not before she caught my eye and gave me a look of pure, unadulterated pity. It was worse than the anger. I sat back down, my heart hammering against my ribs like a trapped bird. I looked at the blood on my thumb and then at the phone. It started ringing. It was Greg's wife. I knew the caller ID. I knew the rhythm of her persistence. I looked at the transfer button, then at the door to Greg's office where he was undoubtedly already crafting the email to HR that would end my time at Miller & Associates. I didn't answer it. I let it ring and ring. I watched the light on the console blink, a steady, rhythmic pulse of someone else's disaster bleeding into my own. I looked at the revolving door, the way the sunlight hit the glass, and I wondered how much my silence was worth. Greg's office door remained shut, but I could hear him shouting through the drywall, blaming the world for the hole he had dug for himself. He was going to take me down with him, not because I had done anything wrong, but because I was the only one who had seen him blink. I picked up my bag, the leather cool and familiar under my hand. I didn't wait for the HR summons. I didn't wait for the "we're going in a different direction" speech. I walked toward the glass doors, the blood on my thumb finally starting to dry into a dark, ugly crust. As I pushed through the exit, I heard the elevator chime. The HR director was stepping out, a folder tucked under her arm, her eyes searching for the girl at the desk who had seen too much.